Today on the Afternoon Magazine, I'll discuss the business of television with the TV critic for the New York Post, and most familiar to public radio listeners, for his work on NPR's Fresh Air with Terry Gross. We'll explore the new fall season, reflect on the direction Katie Couric takes the evening news, and maybe puzzle about why the American Idol audience grows larger every year. I'm Bill Hammack. Join me here on AM 580 WILL Urbana by calling 333-WILL or 800-222-WILL. That's 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. Let's welcome to the Afternoon Magazine David Bianculli.
Hi, Bill.
David, let's start with what disappeared from TV in the last year or two. HBO's cult hit Six Feet Under went under itself with its fifth and final season, and now you've been able to see the whole series. What's your take on it?
Seeing a whole series on DVD is a wonderful way to see it. And where I thought that it dipped in the last year before it went off, it came back kind of strong, and that ending I considered one of the best endings ever for a TV series.
You would put it up there with the Newhart ending? And
I would put it up there with Newhart and with St. Elsewhere as being one of my favorite three. It was really, for a series that was all about death, it was very inspired. Before we go any further, and I know this isn't you, I've actually been on your radio station so long that at one point I was at the New York Post, but for the last 13 years I've been at the Daily News. And if they heard
David,
that I was still going under my old, you know, now arch rival.
I apologize. That is purely my fault.
No, that's okay.
You are still with Fresh Air with Terry Gross.
I am still with Fresh Air, and that was correct at one point. So.
All right. So HBO ended on a surprisingly, or HBO, rather, Six Feet Under, on a surprisingly upbeat note, which took me by surprise. Now, you mentioned that came out on DVD and as a wonderful way to view it. In fact, for my wife and I, we really changed our viewing habits. We didn't subscribe to HBO. We instead watched all of Six Feet Under on DVD. Tell me a little bit about HBO, how it finances. Does DVD dramatically change how HBO operates?
DVD is changing how all of TV operates, but it's leading to a very weird dichotomy that's changing what we think of as television and how we discuss and react to television. It used to be when there was only one television set in the house and we all watched it at the same time, mm-hmm. that television was a fully shared experience, and you would talk about it the next day. You know, when you have that shock ending of Newhart, you know, mm-hmm. everybody talked about it the next day. Did you see that? You jump forward 15 years, and now some people don't want to hear about it for a few days afterwards, and they get angry because they have it on TiVo or they have it recorded and they want to watch it when they want to. Or there are people who like yourself, store something up for an entire season. And people do that for shows like Lost now, mm-hmm. because they are so layered and so multi-textured that they get more enjoyment out of it, being able to watch it when they want to watch it as closely, pause, have no commercials, mm-hmm. No interruptions. And yet what they have to do for almost a full year is walk away from any conversation about that program.
Yes, we had that problem with Six Feet Under. In fact, somebody revealed parts of the ending to us and did not ruin a friendship, but boy, did it come close.
You know, at some point, you know, it's got to be okay to say,
sure,
Rosebud was a sled.
Yeah.
You know, it's been 50 years.
Yes. And I think Six Feet Under is in that category now that it's out on DVD and, you know, people would have a chance to watch it.
But you know why you say that, Bill?
Yeah.
Because you've seen the end.
That's true.
So now it's okay. There are people out there that have it on their shelves who haven't gotten to it yet, or who still have waited to see it and would like to not know. It's a very odd thing.
Yeah, I'll confess, I've been very careful today, and when I thought about this interview, to not reveal, you know, too many details of that ending.
Yeah, and I didn't either when I was talking about it. And I'm one of the people that's fighting for the fact that we should be able to. Mm-hmm. Now, I fight in advance. I don't like spoilers and don't like to give any of them.
Mm-hmm.
But after the fact, I don't think you're really spoiling it.
Now, so does this coming out on DVD, does that change the revenue stream for HBO and allow them to do things they couldn't do at all before?
It doesn't change it so much in terms of the content, but it changes the picture in much the way that it does with theatrical movies,
mm-hmm.
where movies can actually make more money and do now from DVD than they do from box office. So some films will get financed that wouldn't get financed before. Right now, a lot of television shows this season are trying to follow the Lost model from 2 years ago with serialized stories. Well, and this is different from just a few years before that, when the big model was supposed to be CSI and Law and Order, where everything was self-contained. Those shows repeat very well. That's old-style TV. Lost does not repeat well and doesn't even get repeated fully on TV, but sells so well on DVD that the idea of a whole season arc, like The Sopranos has, like 6 Feet Under has, that becomes a very nice marketable element for post-television DVD sales.
Well, let's talk about that story arc a little bit, because it's kind of a middle ground between miniseries and a weekly TV show. And I notice a lot of shows adopting that now. 24, Prison Break, you mentioned Lost, and I was watching TV and saw even more and kind of went, you know, ugh.
Mm-hmm.
Can you shed some light on that? I mean, when did it start? Is that new, or was there a show that pioneered this kind of format?
The success of 24 really pushed it forward, and then after that you had Lost, where it was really aggressive in terms of bringing out the storyline week by. I mean, it's not new. Twin Peaks did it 11 years ago. The Fugitive did it back in the 60s. The Prisoner did it in the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
So there are television programs that have tried it in the past, but television has always been an imitative medium, and anything that succeeds big will be imitated many times very quickly. And so that's what we're into right now. There are probably a dozen new dramas or comedies that are serialized this year. And there's just no way to put all of them on your night shelf. You know, you just can't commit to weekly doses of all these shows. So a lot of them are destined to fail. But each network isn't worried about the other ones. They just want theirs to succeed.
Well, I also recall this from Wise Guy, which seemed to me in the late 80s that really used this story arc. It was a very innovative cop show from that time.
Yeah, and that's a great example, because what happened with Wise Guy is that they didn't go an entire season with one story. They did like two or three stories a season and called them arcs, and so you could get a guest star for 8 episodes that wouldn't commit to a whole season, much less for an entire series.
Now, it occurs to me when I was watching these promos, does this lock people into the show or does it exclude them? Do the studios and the writers debate this when they're planning a show like this?
Well, when everybody wants a Lost, people will go in with one. You know, so it doesn't hurt to try and come up with a show that's going to be that sort of serialized. There are times where there's going to be seasons in a few years where nobody's going to want one, and you're not going to be able to do that again. But right now, it's sort of like a, what would that be, a seller's market? Yes.
Yeah. So let's continue with kind of dead and dying TV. The comedy Arrested Development was another loss in 2005. And that struck me as a very bright, very intelligent, even intricate comedy. I mean, I absolutely loved it. Why would that not succeed?
I've been a TV critic for a real long time, and I found that while more and more there is some sort of a correlation between quality and viewership, there's no guarantee. I think the top 10 of television is much more respectable than the top 10 movies or even the top 10 bestsellers in print. I mean, there's just more quality there across the board. But that doesn't mean that a show that demands a lot of loyalty and a lot of tolerance very early on is going to necessarily make it. This season, with only 2 episodes on the air, there's a question as to whether Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip on NBC will make it. And it's a wonderfully written show. But don't know whether it's going to survive.
Did you enjoy Arrested Development? Were you a watcher of that?
Yes. Yeah, I like Arrested Development a lot.
It had a lot of inside jokes, inside television jokes, and perhaps that would appeal particularly to you.
Well, you know, I don't consider myself anything special in terms of as a viewer, but the inside jokes appeal to me because I watch so much TV. But they intentionally put a lot of multi-layered jokes in that show so that people who bought the DVDs would enjoy them. I mean, they actually had an eye on the aftermarket, mm-hmm. and were writing it that way.
Mm-hmm. And my wife and I are going back through the DVDs. We watched it in original broadcast, and it is indeed very enjoyable, very intricate at times. So I've mentioned two shows that I was sad to see go in 2005. Did any of
but
your
shows that you didn't support when they were on the air, well, I hasten to point out.
Arrested Development, I did. I did watch that.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay.
But
that you're a Nielsen family, in which case it doesn't matter. But,
true.
But what if Nielsen families are doing the same thing?
Well, I think that's a question that we're going to get to, I think, when we talk a little bit about the business of television. But I want to know, was there any favorites for you that ended in 2005 or anything that you were happy to see go?
There's always things that I'm happy to see go. Just this season, I'm happy to see Happy Hour go.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a Fox comedy that was just dreadfully unimaginative. And it's not officially canceled yet, but they pulled it off the schedule this week, and it's not going to show up until after baseball. And maybe by the time baseball's over, they'll have hoped that we'll have forgotten about it, and it won't come back.
Hmm.
But, yeah, when so much of television, this is a very good season for TV, by mm-hmm. the way. The average is very high in terms of quality in the programming, but there's always plenty of fat to cut.
Well, let's go ahead and take a look at the new season. I noticed that Brothers and Sisters on ABC has a knockout cast. I mean, Rachel Griffiths, fresh from 6 Feet Under, Calista Flockhart from Ally McBeal, and everybody else, Sally Field, Tom Skerritt, Ron Rifkin. Have you seen it?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think of it?
How can a cast like that miss? Mm-hmm. And then you watch the show and you learn the answer. it was a disappointment to me. And I don't go to shows hoping to be disappointed. So that was actually one of the season's big letdowns for me.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas on the other hand, you go to Studio 60 and you have Matthew Perry and Brad Whitford, and you have, you know, Ed Asner, Judd Hirsch in the first episode, and mm-hmm. all these people, and it doesn't let you down.
Now, I'm a fan of quirky comedies on TV. I mean, I mentioned Arrested Development, and I loved Andy Richter's universe, and I don't know anybody
out
there.
I did, too. Good for you.
Well, if my wife and I pick out a quirky, it's usually Fox comedy. We know it's gone in a season or two.
Mm-hmm.
But a show that caught my eye just yesterday, the promo was Ugly Betty.
Mm-hmm.
And very oddly, this is a remake of a Colombian telenovela. Can you tell us what a telenovela is? And maybe, if you've seen it, give us a report on Ugly Betty?
Sure. A telenovela is basically what we've been talking about in terms of like wise guy with a story arc. The idea behind a telenovela is that it's a soap opera with some exaggerated elements. Some are comedy, some are not. That runs 5 days a week for 13 weeks usually,
mm-hmm.
and then that's it. It's basically like a giant mini series, and the draw for it internationally is that anything can happen to these characters. Just as in a miniseries, they can die at any point. Things can happen. You don't have to worry about the characters being around in seasons 3 and 4. Although the stars of telenovelas very frequently go right into other telenovelas, playing other characters, but cashing in on their own popularity.
Now, I may be a little culturally insensitive here, but a telenovela is usually a little overwrought, or is that just, you know, a cultural difference?
It seems to be very overwrought.
Okay.
But it seems to be part of the flavor, and it's not simply from the Latino versions that there are telenovelas mm-hmm. that are done in the Netherlands and in Germany, and they all seem to do this. It's the new big hot format, and this season it's coming to the United States.
ABC's
on a telenovela mm-hmm. that ran for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be a weekly, hour-long sitcom, so it's not really a telenovela, but there are two that just launched earlier this month on something new called My Network TV.
Mm-hmm.
And one's called Desire, and one's called Fashion House, and they are in the standard format, 5 days a week with a recap on Saturdays, a one-hour recap, and they run for 13 weeks. And one of them stars Morgan Fairchild and Bo Derek, and they're both horrible.
Now, the Ugly Betty, though, is to be an hour-long comedy,
mm-hmm.
which is a little bit unusual.
Less and less. I mean, it's very weird. Northern Exposure
Yes.
You know, was a drama that won an Emmy for drama and then sort of said, well, we're sort of a comedy. Mm-hmm. Ally McBeal. You know, Boston Legal right now is an hour-long comedy, mm-hmm. no matter what mm-hmm. they call it. And Desperate Housewives, arguably, is as well.
So have you seen Ugly Betty? Should I tune into it?
Yeah, I've seen the first two Ugly Bettys. I gave it 3 stars out of 4. Mm-hmm. I like it. And it's a little bit overwrought in both the comedy and the drama, just as a telenovela is. So that takes a little bit of getting used to. But it's got a couple of good performances, and it's in a very good time slot on a very good night, so it'll probably make it.
I'm talking about television with David Bianculli, TV critic for Fresh Air with Terry Gross and also for the New York Daily News. Please give us a call with your questions, 333-WILL or 800-222-WILL. That's 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. In fact, we have a caller from Champaign. So with the caller on line 4, please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Enjoying the show. Just a quick comment and maybe a question, and I'll go ahead and ring off. You're probably talking to somebody here way off the scale. I'm 50 with 2 small kids, and mm-hmm. I'm not finding anything. I'm not finding anything on TV that is worth watching. But then again, I'm guessing I'm not between 18 and 34 with the demographics, and I'm guessing that's where they're headed. I was interested in a comment by Bob Newhart. He was on Terry Gross's show a while ago, and they asked him, they said, you know, do you think sitcoms would make the comeback, and do you think your show could ever be repeated? And he said, no. You know, the audience is just different. The audience is so fragmented. Mm-hmm. And I was just wondering from your guest if he thought the same thing, or, you know, did he see those types of shows ever making a comeback. You know, I watched the old Bob Newhart on DVD, and mm-hmm. they do seem dated, but they're enjoyable, and you can watch them with the whole family, which is unique. Mm-hmm. And I'll go ahead and ring off and listen. Thank you.
Well, David, our caller has an interesting question. I mean, first of all, I've been watching Bob Newhart, oddly enough, the original show on DVD, and knows exactly what he means. But is television all for the 18 to 34-year-old, the magic demographic? Is there things for this person to watch?
No, that's the thing that they're obsessed by. Mm-hmm. But there are, even this season, certain bright spots. I would say that Studio 60 is a bright spot. 30 Rock, which is a comedy that comes next month from Tina Fey of Saturday Night Live.
I noted that on my schedule to be sure to tape it and tune in.
Yeah, that's mm-hmm. that's a comedy for adults and a very funny one. And but he's got a real good point. I disagree with Bob Newhart, and I adore Bob Newhart, but I sort of think just when television is sure that some genre is dead, that's the exact time to revisit it.
Mm-hmm.
The Western is dead, and we get Deadwood.
Mm-hmm.
The game show is dead, and we get Millionaire.
Sure.
And Deal or No Deal.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing how when something has been gone for a long time and been given up on. The comedy, the last time the sitcom was supposed to be dead, the standard sitcom, was in the mid-'80s.
Yes.
And then Bill Cosby came around with The Cosby Show. Mm-hmm. And changed everything.
So you mentioned a few shows. Is there anything else in this new season that you want to bring to our listeners' attention or maybe steer them away from?
There's a new show on ABC called The Nine, which I'm very excited by. This is very much in the vein of Lost and of all of the programs in the last couple of years that have tried to capture the flavor of Lost and the ambition of it. I think The Nine comes closest. And that it actually is going to be right after Lost, Lost premieres. Is that a week from? Yeah, next week, next
mm-hmm.
Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about 9 people who are caught in a daytime bank robbery hostage situation. And we see them all just before they go into the bank, and we see them coming out more than 2 days later. And we don't know what happened inside the bank. Mm-hmm. And then slowly we find out as we keep following these people afterwards. But it's very gripping, and it's got a good cast. And where a lot of these serialized shows this year just didn't have any traction, that one did.
Mm-hmm. And is there anything other than Brothers and Sisters that maybe doesn't live up to its promise?
Oh, sure. The doesn't live up to its promise. There's there's quite a few of those. I can't steer people away from Desire and Fashion House enough.
Now, these are on a rebranded network. This is the My...
The My Network TV, yes. Which is, you know, not really so much a network as glorified syndication.
Mm-hmm.
Talk show with Spike Ferriston on Fox is a disappointment. Most of the Fox series this year are disappointments, which is unusual because they've been pretty good with program development.
The Fox serials, you said?
No, the Fox series. Almost everything that has already premiered on Fox has not been really worth sticking with.
I've noticed that. My wife and I used to have a rule. If Fox debuts a comedy, we'll watch it 3 times and see where it goes. We found their comedies often that worthwhile.
I'll bet you didn't do that with Happy Hour.
No, we sure didn't.
Yeah.
The couple that didn't survive.
No, you couldn't do that with that. Other ones that I would steer people towards... Heroes on NBC. It's going to sound awful because it's very much a comic book kind of idea, but it's an X-Men comic book kind of idea, and I've seen the first 3 episodes, and they do good things with it. So it's about people who just suddenly discover that they have these various abilities and don't know why and don't know what they have to do with them, but they actually have to get together and save the world within, like, 50 days or something.
Now, that does sound terrible, but you're saying that it's...
I'm saying, you know, give it a try.
Give it a try. Well, maybe let's turn from fictional television for a minute to the reality world. Now, I'm a big fan of American Idol, and by big, I mean I've seen every episode of every season, and I voted.
Oh, you voted?
I voted.
I was going to say, so long as you don't vote, Phil, it's okay. Wow.
And although I like the show, I am surprised that every year
for
its
whom?
Audience...
Let's not get away with this.
Oh,
whom did you vote?
Kelly, Clay... was the next one the Carrie Underwood season? Fantasia. Then Carrie, I voted for Bo, and in the last one... I voted for the guy who spazzes out, whose name is escaping me now. Taylor Hicks, yes,
yeah.
The guy who won. So, yes, indeed I voted.
Well, you seem to have a good record.
It's about every other year. But I'm really surprised, though, that its audience gets larger, even though I love the show. That doesn't happen, I think, to most reality shows. I don't think it's happened to Survivor. So do you have any insight into why this show has done so well?
They expected it to go down in the fourth season, and it went way up and changed Fox's fortunes. And now nobody knows how long it will last. All things have to cycle out and go down, but this is becoming extremely durable. Survivor, you're right, plateaued in its second season. Still does very well, but it really, these reality shows, when they catch the imagination, don't keep it, usually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like Millionaire with Regis Philbin. ABC overdid it in a year or two, and then it was gone.
And right now, Deal or No Deal, wherever NBC puts it, it does really well. But that's right now. American Idol is a phenomenon, and maybe it's because, unlike, say, America's Next Top Model, where none of them actually becomes the next top model.
Sure.
With American Idol, thanks to Kelly Clarkson more than anybody else, there actually is some record of actual, honest-to-goodness success.
Well, let's go ahead and turn to a caller now from Mattoon, Illinois. So, caller on line number one, please go ahead.
Just a quick question. I was wondering if the show Medium has been canceled for this season. I haven't noticed any advertisements or anything listed.
It has been pulled until mid-season. It's not on... the fall schedule. And the reason is because, even though NBC may not tell you this, is that they were trying to get younger demographics on that night, and Medium, while winning its time slot and being a popular show, skewed older, as they say. And so the people that are my age aren't the people that they're after the most. Although there are differences. Programs like Studio 60, if they get a very affluent yet older audience, the network will stay with them because they like, you know, people who make an awful lot of money. But
so it would be on maybe sometime after the first of the year?
Yeah, you can look for it. January is your best bet, although if a couple of these NBC dramas tank really quickly, you might see it sooner.
Okay.
But it will be back.
All right. Thank you.
Let's go ahead with another call. We have a caller from Champaign County on line 2.
Hi. since you're paid to watch television,
not enough.
what is David Mamet doing with UNIT? Special Forces, buddy film, women at home.
Yeah.
I mean, I tune into these things sociologically. I have a more political bent, but I like to watch what people are seeing in the way of, you know, America's role in the world. And I confess that I did get hooked into 24, and they have these sort of liberal twists in it.
Mm-hmm.
And though now Jack Bauer has been kidnapped by the Chinese, so we don't know what's going to happen next. the next enemy is in sight, I guess. But I can't watch it. It just seems, I tried, as I say, I don't have a capacity for.
Same reaction. I David Mamet, I thought, coming to series television, how fabulous. Mm-hmm. This is going to be great. And it wasn't. And actually, to people who watch the unit, I was much more interested in the wives at home than I was in the actual unit off, you know, doing its secret missions all around the world. Those seem to me to be just one step above Mission Impossible, the TV series from the 60s,
mm-hmm.
where you would go to countries, you know, called things like Foreignistan.
Yes.
And they would have stoppin' signs, you know. It just seemed ridiculous. And it didn't sound like David Mamet, and I don't know. But I was surprised by that. I was even more surprised when that show became a big success.
When 24 became a big success.
No. The unit.
The unit, okay.
Is a hit.
Mm-hmm.
That
mm-hmm.
I thought that was going to get rejected handily and quickly.
Hmm. Well, you know, we were talking a little bit about reality shows, and one thing that CBS did with Survivors, they made headlines by dividing the teams by races, and that may not be very responsible, but did it make for arresting television?
Well, I think it made for an arresting campaign leading up to the season. I'm cynical enough in general, and impressed enough by the people behind Survivor, because I've watched that show just like you've watched American Idol.
Mm-hmm.
I watch American Idol that way too, but I mean, I've watched every episode, and you know what they're doing, and what they're doing when they divide by races is just not that much different than when they used to divide. They divided one season by ages, and one season by gender. And they just did it for the first few weeks to mix things up, and then they mixed it up again long before the merge, and I'm sure they'll do that now. But it was a way of getting a lot of attention in its 10th season, which they did, and most of the people who were very upset about it and complaining about it are people whom I suspect never watched the show. So
mm-hmm.
those are usually the people who complain most loudly about particular television programs are the ones that don't watch it anyway.
Now, another show that kind of played the race card, if you will, I mean, big time, was A&E's Black and White. And did you see that at all?
Yes, that was. I think that may have been. Was that FX and not A&E?
I'm sorry. You're right. It was FX.
Okay.
Maybe you could describe for our callers what the show did.
What the show did was it took two families, the one African American, one Caucasian, and threw them in makeup chairs and had them look like the other races, and then sort of go into various parts of society and try to pass and come back and see what they learned. It reminded me of this old Eddie Murphy sketch on Saturday Night Live, where they put him in whiteface and then had him going into these rooms where whenever there was not a black person in the room, all these wonderful things were lavished on these people that was just excluded from any minority. And he finally got to see into that secret world. It wasn't like that. It certainly wasn't played for laughs. But what happens with all reality shows is that it really depends mostly upon the characters, the personalities. And, you know, one of the fathers was kind of a jerk.
Mm-hmm.
One of the wives was a definite jerk.
Well, they cast for this, I assume, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, they chose these families. These weren't actors,
mm-hmm.
but they got, you know, in the white family, the mother was so insufferably new age that she was hard to tolerate.
Mm-hmm.
And in the black family, the patriarch had a little bit more attitude than he should have.
Mm-hmm.
And so there wasn't a lot of lessons being learned across the board because people weren't going to listen to them. That in itself may have been the lesson. But I do remember the white daughter from that show passing as black and going and joining a black theater troupe and
mm-hmm.
or poetry troupe and then revealing herself at some point was good television and fairly effective.
Yeah, and the show was interesting, an interesting premise, but those good moments were kind of few and far between on it. I thought they could have done better. Well, maybe let's turn to the news then. We saw the debut of Katie Couric on CBS. Is she going to reinvigorate what I'm going to call a dying evening news franchise? I mean, maybe it's not dying.
I don't think it is dying.
Mm-hmm.
The franchises are still watched by almost 10 million people,
mm-hmm.
which is a lot of people.
What is the demographic of that 10 million, though?
The demographic is older. That's the key question.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is, how do you get these 18 to 34 people to watch an evening newscast when sitting stagnantly at 6:30 to 7 to wait for your news to be spoon-fed to you just isn't what they're used to or interested in?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a tough question. It's an equally tough question in my business. How do you get that same demographic to read a newspaper?
Sure.
It's just a generational shift. It's not necessarily a failure of the form. It's an evolution of the audience.
I mean, was that the intent, do you think, of getting Couric on the CBS News to bring that demographic back in, or just to keep CBS News?
Well, I don't know, because she's out of the demographic herself.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
You know, what CBS seems to be doing with this newscast is putting more feature or perspective stuff into the news, and you know the thing to say about that is that, well, we need news more than ever, and if there's only 22 minutes without commercials in a half-hour newscast, every second should be precious.
Mm-hmm.
CBS's counter-argument is that people are getting the news elsewhere, a lot of it. We don't need to be responsible for being the paper of record every single day, and they'll do the news that is they feel the most important and then some other elements to keep people tuned and keep people involved. I don't know. I don't know where I fall on that yet.
I'm talking about television with David Biancooley, TV critic for Fresh Air and also for the New York Daily News. You can call with your questions at 333-WILL or 800-222-WILL. That's 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. Well, you know, when we mentioned network news there, we mentioned a demographic of 10 million people or so. And I want to, for the listeners, put ratings in perspective here. A couple of weeks ago, I was able to see clips of Ira Glass's new television series. Glass, of course, created and...
No, I haven't seen that yet. Did you like it?
Yes. Yeah, it is. It's very radio, though. And I'm very curious how it will move from medium to medium. It's, to my eye, clearly still a radio show.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we're talking about This American Life, which Ira Glass created, and now he has a version for TV's Showtime. And he said that his radio show gets about 1.8 million listeners a week, and that if his television show got anywhere near that, it would be a mega hit for Showtime. So can you give us a little feeling for the ratings and numbers? I mean, do the networks still dominate? Has cable taken over? I mean, how many people watch Bill O'Reilly, I guess, is kind of the question.
Yeah, no, I mean, Bill O'Reilly is, about 1.5 million, 2 million tops. It's amazing how the things that we talk about the most in the media are not the things that are most popular. But if, for example, during a presidential election, when only 250,000 people would watch Larry King on CNN,
mm-hmm.
he would still be front page news the next day, no matter what, because among that 250,000 were people in newsrooms
mm-hmm.
who would write about what he said. Now, you have, Showtime getting 1 million viewers would be a big hit. The Sopranos at its zenith was 9 million.
On HBO. That was as high as 9 million at its zenith.
Yes, but the shows that are on Deadwood, I think, is pulling in 2 million.
Mm-hmm.
mm-hmm. And is not going to. Entourage, I think, is around 2 million. And these are fairly loose and may not be totally up to date. But you have a program like According to Jim,
mm-hmm.
which just went off the air, a sitcom on ABC that nobody, no critic that I know, ever gave it any shrift or wrote about it at all, and that was seen weekly by probably 8 million, 9 million people.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was seen by as many people as The Sopranos.
Hmm.
But you wouldn't, you know, you think about The Sopranos as being part of the zeitgeist and a cultural force.
Sure.
And you sure don't think of that. I mean, Grey's Anatomy right now, 25 million people. That's the biggest show on TV.
Yeah, and vastly different production values between
yeah.
Sopranos and According to Jim. I mean, to put this in perspective a little bit, you mentioned, you know, 2 million viewers for Deadwood. I believe Arrested Development on Fox was getting around 3.5 or 4 million
mm-hmm.
and was considered something of a failure
yes.
on Fox. So maybe that puts the numbers in perspective.
Yeah, network TV, you need 5 million or so to keep going.
So networks still dominate, followed by PBS and then cable, or is that...
Cable can outdo PBS pretty easily most of the time.
Okay.
But there's the aftermarket in terms of DVD that is now in play.
Mm-hmm.
There are shows that don't have a large overall audience but have a very big young demographic audience and stay on because of that.
Mm-hmm.
And there are all, but the networks are losing. It's like a beach that's slowly eroding.
Mm-hmm.
And the network's share of the overall pie is going down, but
mm-hmm.
the pie is getting bigger.
Mm-hmm.
As the population gets bigger, so it's a somewhat self-correcting thing at this point.
So to reiterate, when we're watching CNN, you know, Larry King live, if it's not a real big guest, he may be as low as 100, 150,000 people. Is that probably a fair statement, or have I got that a little bit low?
No, Larry King can go. Yeah, Larry King can be, you know, 200,000 or mm-hmm. less at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Bill O'Reilly is up at 1 million. Jon Stewart, I don't think, is at the million mark. He may be.
Mm-hmm. Very influential show.
Above it. You know, it's so funny that there are programs, there are things that have been seen more. For example, when Jon Stewart went on Crossfire
mm-hmm.
and attacked the host.
I watched this on YouTube.
Yes. The point is, you didn't watch it on Crossfire.
Mm-hmm.
Hardly anybody did. The Crossfire mm-hmm. audience that day was probably 50,000 people. Tops. That's generous for
mm-hmm.
Crossfire. But more people saw that within 3 or 4 hours as a viral video on YouTube or AOL or
mm-hmm.
somewhere else
mm-hmm.
As something they wanted to see. And so, you know, it may not even matter where the eyeballs come in the future, as long as they get out there.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's cast our net even wider and look at television as a whole. And you already, I think, got to this a little bit. You know, if we look at the ratings for television, for example, if we look at MASH, I believe MASH had 100 million viewers for its finale.
Yeah.
And if you look at Seinfeld, it was 75 million. These are rough numbers, but I think, you know, within the ballpark.
Yeah.
And Friends had 50 million.
Mm-hmm.
And that's talking about kind of the erosion in network television, you know, with all the iPods, MP3s, video games. You know, what is the future of television? I mean, it's up a little bit right now, the last numbers that I saw. Television viewing time, but in general, it's kind of on this downward slope. What is the future for television?
It's a great question. The future for television is that we are witnessing the slow death of the last mass medium.
Mm-hmm.
It's a sad thing to say, but it seems unavoidable. I think that there will always be broadcast network television in some form to bring us news, sports, live events, and perhaps even a core entertainment schedule, as we have now with the networks. But it is not ever again going to be what it was 10 years ago,
mm-hmm.
20 years ago, 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And there always was something in the 20th century. First there was, you know, radio that was the cultural entertainment medium of immediacy, that if you wanted to know what was going on, you went to radio. Radio brought you your entertainment. Radio brought you everything. It was dominant. And then television came in,
mm-hmm.
and radio adapted and changed, but still exists. Television will adapt and change and still exist now that the computer is here, but the computer will not become a mass medium.
Mm-hmm.
And television has ceased to be that mass, a mass medium. And I don't think that we're going to mourn this enough. I don't think that we're noticing exactly what you're asking, but I think we are losing our shared cultural touchstones one by one.
Now, as a TV critic, do you tune in and enjoy and also comment professionally on things like YouTube?
When YouTube reflects on television, I do. For example, when mm-hmm. Saturday Night Live does a skit that within 2 or 3 days on the internet takes over and actually revives Saturday Night Live because this one little 3-minute, you know, Chronicles of Narnia video is all over the place,
mm-hmm.
Then that becomes my job. But television, which when I started was 3 networks and PBS, is now zillions of networks and all this other stuff. I don't need to review YouTube, too. You know, let somebody else do that. Please, God.
Now, one kind of format we haven't talked about is when I was a kid, the miniseries was the big, big thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't hear as much about them, but there was one on 9/11 recently. Did you watch that? Did you have a response to that?
Yeah, I had. I watched that one.
And what did you observe? I mean, did it entertain you?
I understood what it was doing. I was not as offended as President Carter was,
mm-hmm.
By the fact that there were some liberties taken with facts and characters and interpretations,
mm-hmm.
because in terms of docudramas, that stuff happens all the time. I think I ended up putting it at like 2.5 stars or something like that. I wasn't blown away by it, and actually. The controversy was as interesting as the program. But there are certain miniseries that come around, The Brotherhood on Showtime last year. It's still one of my favorite forms, but the networks just aren't doing them much anymore.
Mm-hmm. Well, David, the last time I talked to you, you recommended a British miniseries called The Singing Detective.
Did you ever go find it out?
I had already watched it.
I'm sorry.
I'm the one, right.
That's right. I should have remembered that.
It's been 2 or 3 years now, but you called it at that time the best dramatic work ever written for television.
Mm-hmm.
And you recommended not describing what it was about, but just telling listeners to go get the DVD. And so has anything topped this in your opinion, or does your recommendation still hold?
No, that's still it. That's still my high watermark. And I actually go back and I watch it once every couple of years just to make sure.
Well, in preparing for this interview, it's actually made me go get it again and want to watch it. And I think we should emphasize there was a movie version, I believe, remade with
Robert Downey Jr. that was nowhere near as good. Yeah, don't make that mistake. You have to find the British miniseries with Michael Gambon.
Mm-hmm. Well, David, we're out of time now, and I really appreciate you taking the time to chat with us.
Well, thanks a lot. Very challenging questions. I'm very impressed with your preparation.
Thank you.
Not so much by my answers, but it was a pleasure.
I'm Bill Hammack, and I've been talking with David Bianculli, TV critic for the New York Daily News and a regular contributor to NPR's Fresh Air with Terry Gross.